And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm good. We got big time Thursday night football game ahead. The Cleveland Browns and the Denver Broncos. We got a great football weekend on the horizon. You are super excited as you sit here with your App State hoodie on, your beanie on, celebrating the Mountaineers home victory. I think it was their first, home win, or their first win over a ranked team since way back against Michigan.
I think it's their first home win. It's their first home win ever over a top 25 team. It's their first win period versus a top 25 team since the Michigan game in 2007. So that's what's weird, because we've beat since then. We beat that year we beat North Carolina, South Carolina, but then you look at like these big time games. Like they had Penn State was top 10 team in the country. We took them to overtime. Tennessee was a top 10 team. We took them to overtime. So we've kind of had some close ones, just haven't quite been able to finish them. But somebody was asking me about it last night over text, you know, congratulations and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, look, I know Coastal's number 14 in the country and they're a great team. We just had Coach Shadwell on. We respect them and all that. But at App State, like, you're supposed to beat Coastal Carolina. Like, it was more enjoyable beating a non-top 25 South Carolina team than it was beating a number 14 ranked Coastal Carolina. Like, it is what it is.
It is what it is, but it's funny that you talk about that mindset, right? I didn't know this, but evidently they won 17 out of their last 18 games.
Yeah.
Coastal.
Oh, yeah, they're rolling.
And how the model of consistency that they have put out, and, you know, Coach Chadwell's fourth year at the spot. So, in a way, it still is a big win, because you're talking about a team that is beginning to become a bit of a brand. I would still say that App State, to me, maybe I'm from North Carolina, is still more of a brand than Coastal. Just because I felt like I'm more familiar with App State. We've seen them win. And even before the ascension to like top football, like they dominated the lower level, you know? And so, but I will say the great thing about the way football is distributed, you now get a chance to see those teams that you didn't see all the time. Like back in the day, it would be a big deal for App State to have a national game that everyone had a chance to check out and look at. Because you get a chance to see the stadium, you get a chance to see some of the pageantry around the facility. And for me, because I've only been to Boone once, I went to, whatever year, I went on a pro day, but I've never been to a game there. So it was really the first time they got a chance to see App State under the lights. Because back in the day, even coming up or whatever, App State always had to play the road game. Whenever they came, they came to NC State to play NC State in those games. Obviously, like they came to North Carolina a couple years ago and played in Chapel Hill. Normally, you don't get a chance to see those other teams come to the building. Whatever it is, what do y'all call? What do y'all call the home?
Yeah, field? The Rock, is man. It? Welcome to the Rock.
Why is it called the Rock?
That was when I was there. Is when they named it the Rock, and it was just because you're up on top of a mountain. You're up on top of a rock. Okay. So it used to. They used to play. We always came out. I don't know if they still do. We always came out to Back in Black because we always would wear. You know, I mean,
y'all don't have a lot of uniform diversity. They've shown more because
they have more now.
You have the white helmet with
they have yellow. They mixed in some more yellow than they used to have. But we would always come out, and right before Back in Black would hit, it was Sean Connery, "Welcome to the Rock," and then boom, the cannons fire, the smoke, and then we run out. So that was our whole.
I dig that. I'm big on traditions. I'm big on walkout music and all that other stuff. And so I get that. I didn't know it was called the Rock.
Because you think Alcatraz, the Rock, like up on a mountain. So it has it's a beautiful setting for a game. So anybody who lives in North Carolina, hasn't been up there, I mean, even if you don't have any rooting interest in who wins or who loses, it's a fun atmosphere. Just go up there and check it out.
That's cool. Now, you know, I can't let you talk about it because the old scout in me is like, okay, if I do venture up there and I'm going to a game, where do I need to eat?
Oh, Daniel Boone Inn. Daniel Boone Inn is the famous place. Because you get the biscuits. They get you a hand biscuit up there. That's a must. You got to stop in there.
I love it. No, it was a great win. It was actually a great game to watch. And I was going.
That offense is fun with Coastal. All the option stuff that they do is fun to watch.
Man, they do a ton. They do a ton of it. And it's funny that they are known for the option because – I think Georgia Southern parted ways with their head coach. So I wonder what that is going to look like going forward, because, you know, they're synonymous with the option. I mean, I know they're all old SoCon flavor all permeated, but man, the option is such a big part of what those leagues and those schools have been tied to that I just would expect to see more option football, because more option football to me is old school football, and I love that.
All right. As much as I would love to continue talking about App State this entire pod, I'm sure there's other people that have other things they're interested in than a big Sun Belt tilt on a Wednesday night. Anyways, it was fun. It was a fun ball game. I want to get to a couple different topics here, Buck. I think the headliner, though, we need to discuss the news that came out about Deshaun Watson and a potential trade. Let's get to that right after this. All right, well, this was the buzz. I mean, I think I was doing something else, and then I hopped on my computer, Buck, and I just saw Deshaun Watson trending. And so I thought, okay, maybe there's some finality to the legal stuff that's going on. I mean, what's going on? And then it pops up, and it was a lot of respected voices, including John McClain, who's as good as it gets, come out of Houston saying this trade with Deshaun Watson to Miami could go down within the week. Love to get your thoughts on that one.
Well, I think here's what happens, and credit the Houston Texans for standing firm and just kind of biting the bullet when it came to Deshaun Watson and what they want to do. They haven't relented necessarily on their offer, and they've been able to allow time to work on their side. A couple of things have happened that have allowed Deshaun Watson to now reemerge as a trend on the trading market. Number one, we all have high hopes. We all have worked in organizations where we are optimistic that, hey, our team is ready to go. And then you start playing. And then when you start playing, and if you start tallying up losses, it then makes you rethink the way your roster is constructed. So some of the teams that are now struggling are looking at their current quarterback situation and wondering, man, is our quarterback good enough to get us where we need to go? The second thing has happened. Normally, when you're in the quarterback market, you also have your scouts looking at the college game to kind of figure out who is out there, what's next, how robust is the market going to be when it comes to the NFL draft, where this year, by all accounts, has been a major disappointment for some of the guys that we thought would be high first round or top first round picks in the college game in the next year's draft. Because those guys have underperformed, and we're not, I don't even know if there's a sure thing that we can really get excited about, it now has forced everyone, all right, who's the best quarterback that could be available? Whoop! Lo and behold, we're back to Deshaun Watson, because let's take the off-the-field stuff aside. He's a top-five quarterback. Yeah. He's a top-five quarterback who last year is coming off the best year of his career on a losing team that was 4-12. He played at an MVP level when you look at the numbers and those things. And so because of that, as you know, in front offices, we always mitigate risk versus reward. The risk is, well, I don't know what's going to happen with all the legal stuff and how that's also going to impact his ability to get on the field. So that's risky. The reward is, if we can navigate through those waters, we're going to get a player that we know is a top five player. We know is a game-changing player and maybe a franchise-altering player when we bring him in the building. That reward might be worth the risk and the PR nightmare that you may have to take on when you do make this move.
I'm just curious to see what this looks like. Like, to me, this is my, you know, theory looking at this thing. I have kind of been anti-trading Deshaun Watson during the season. And the reason I have been that way is because I want to know what picks I'm trading for. I don't want to trade Deshaun Watson, and there's too much variance, especially we're in week six. There's a lot of football season left. Did I just trade Deshaun Watson for, you know, a top 10 pick, or did I just trade Deshaun Watson for the 24th pick in this draft? Obviously, there's going to be multiple year of ones and different combination of picks that you'd get. But I would like to know if I want to get a top five pick at least out of this. Even if there's no quarterback, I can get one of these premier defensive linemen in this upcoming draft. I just want to know what I'm getting. So this is my theory on this, and we'll see how it plays out. A lot of times when these trades go down, when those discussions take place in one like this, this is a we'll just play this out, role play it here, Buck. So if I'm Nick Caserio, I call you and say you're Chris Greer in this situation, and I'm going to say the number is five. I need a combination of picks and players, high picks and players. It's going to be five total, you know, that we're after. So you can give me your offer however you want. That might be three ones and two players. But maybe in this case, to be more of a fixed cost to do it now, maybe this is a situation where Houston ends up getting three players that they know can play right now, or really good players, and two picks. Maybe that's what this looks like.
Yeah, and so like you wonder, so then if I'm Cesario and I'm looking at the roster, because the first thing you do is like, oh, that's what I need. I'll say, okay, I'll give you that. I'm going to give you the opportunity to look at my roster and figure out, well, which guys do you want? Because I would try and offer up, hey, man, I give you Byron Jones. I give you one of my offensive linemen. I give you a defensive lineman, and away they go. You might on the other hand be like, oh, yeah, Byron Jones is cool, but I'd rather have Xavier Howard because I know you haven't been able to get him to a deal. So we'll sign him to a deal and we'll bring him on because he fits how we want to play. Then it's trying to figure out who's the other blue chip player that I can pluck from them to go with the picks that I'm going to get. And you say actually two blue chip players because we're going three players, two picks. And so, I mean, I think that's a good strategy. But now that you've seen the Dolphins struggle, are you confident enough that they have two expendable or three expendable blue chip players?
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I'm looking at that, and if I'm Houston, I know he doesn't have a ton of production right now, but I'd be saying, okay, Jalen Phillips has to be a part of this. You're going to give me a premier rusher. He's a first round pick, premier rusher, and it's a set. There's a set value there. I know, you know, who he is, and I'm not having to wonder if I'm going to be having the fourth pick or the 18th pick. Like, that's more of a fixed thing. So I'd be curious, man, when this thing all shakes out, maybe we're thinking all along, you know, three first round picks, a second round pick, and a fourth round pick, you know, or whatever that looks like. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it is a little more player heavy and pick light. Maybe that's the way it goes.
It might be the way to go. And, you know, like, to their credit, the way this has played out, you're going to get a team that is desperate to get a thing. And I don't think that if it's Houston, I don't think they take the quarterback in return. It's not going to be a situation where like, oh,
no, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that.
No. We're not doing that.
Yeah.
I think now you've seen the Dolphins who are at 1-5. They're struggling. You're now Chris Greer and Brian Flores. You're in a bit of a desperation situation because this is the year that it's supposed to pop. You're coming off a 10-6 year a season ago. The next step is supposed to be a playoff berth and then maybe a round or two moving into the tournament. Man, you're well below that standard now. So you have to do something to stave off an angry fan base and an owner who is like, whoa, why are we taking steps back? So it's a different situation, which is why they're there. The other two teams that have come up, though, the Philadelphia Eagles and the Carolina Panthers. I think let's talk about the Eagles because you do know their front office fairly well. Why would they want to jump in the QB sweepstakes right now with Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, I think when you look at the Eagles and you look at Howie Roseman there, look, they've won a Super Bowl. I think he doesn't necessarily get all the credit that he deserves. But I think you look at where they are and some of the struggle, the little recent dip that they just had, I think it looks like from the outside, okay, you get one more quarterback. All right, we're going to give you a shot at one more quarterback to see if it can make it work. Wentz had a good little run, then it fell off, moved on from him. I think they get a chance at one more guy. So do they want to be patient and roll with Jalen Hurts and maybe some of the limitations you have there? Or they've done all this work, they've made these trades to potentially have three first-round picks next year, and if the Colts, you know, are competitive and keep winning, that is going to be a first-round pick because Carson Wentz ain't coming out of the lineup. So you've kind of built to this moment. So this is the time to cash it in if ever there was a time. And if you know anything about the Eagles and their history, they always invest in a quarterback. Look at the money they've paid backup quarterbacks over the years. Much was made when they picked Hurts because he said, we're a quarterback factory. That got all the attention. Yep. Like, they place a premium on the quarterback position. Then you look at offensive line, defensive line. That's like been their MO. That's what they do. Quarterback, offensive line, defensive line, figure the rest of it out. So this is all pointing to this year to have all these picks. And as we've mentioned, being in position to take a quarterback in this draft or trading up to take a quarterback in this draft is not, if you get to play that card one time, I'm not playing that card on any of these draftable guys. Not from what I've seen thus far. I want a proven commodity, which is one of three guys. That is, if somehow Aaron Rodgers forced his way out, if somehow Russell Wilson forced his way out, and then arguably the best option, if you take the off the field stuff, which is its own deal, you got to sort through that. But when you look at Deshaun Watson's ability plus his age, that is the best long-term plan at the quarterback position. Again, I'm not dismissing the off-the-field stuff. You've got to factor all that in and figure all that stuff out. But as a player, that's the best option for any of these teams as a player.
No, I think it is the best option. I do wonder, because the Eagles have been down this road in a way before with Michael Vick, where they had to deal with the PR nightmare that came along with taking on Michael Vick. At the time, he was dealing with the dogfighting conviction, coming out of jail and dealing with that. I'm not saying this is the same. I'm not saying it's necessarily different, but it is a cloud that will hang over the franchise for a while with Deshaun Watson, particularly until he's able to play. Like, I'm not saying that his play will absolve some of the issues that are lingering, but we do know, having been in this league a long time, man, great play can make some of that stuff kind of fade into the background when it comes to what the PR situation will be. And because they've navigated it through, and when they did navigate it through successfully with Michael Vick, they were rewarded with good quarterback play for a period of time with Michael Vick. Deshaun Watson is younger. Deshaun Watson has a longer shelf life than Mike Vick had.
He's a better quarterback.
Better quarterback. Yeah. So it gives them an opportunity to really reset the franchise and do it. So it makes sense. Let's talk about the Carolina Panthers, because the Carolina Panthers made the move for Sam Darnold in the offseason. They committed to take the fifth year option, but Dave Tepper is very, very aggressive in saying that this team needs a quarterback. They need a quarterback to build around. They kind of kicked the tires on this move earlier before all the stuff kind of came up. And it looks like now they're back full circle to maybe they would have an interest in it. Why would you think they would make this move at this time?
Well, again, the talent is the talent. I mean, he's Deshaun Watson. I mean, what would we say? Top five, top six quarterback in the league. Yeah. I mean, the talent's a talent. The other thing is, you know, Buck, I mean, this is Deshaun Watson, this Clemson. He's you know, the Carolinas, this doesn't get any bigger than him in terms of of everybody following his college career all the way up to what he's done in the NFL. So it's a great play in terms of his ability. It's weird to say, because you've got the off the field stuff on one hand, but then he's a, you know, somewhat local kid who these fan base has known and followed throughout his career. So, you know, that's the part that's kind of hard to figure that out and put that all together. But you can see, look, you're always chasing an upgrade no matter what you do. And I think Sam, I still, you know, we've seen Sam ride a little bit of the roller coaster. I think with McCaffrey out of the lineup, he doesn't look like the same guy. It doesn't help they can't catch. I mean, they dropped a bunch of balls last week. But I would say, I wouldn't think they would be the most motivated team. To me, Miami looks clearly the most motivated.
Yeah.
Philadelphia has the most firepower ammunition to be able to pull it off. You know, so that's the fascinating one. And then, you know, Denver seems to be a team that's going to be in the conversation for some quarterback after this year. I tend to think that if you're Aaron Rodgers, that's where I would be trying to get to, would be Denver with all the weapons that they have. But I want to go circle back real quick, because if we're saying this is huge dominoes, right? So if Miami gets Watson, but they don't trade Tua in that deal, then, you know, the rumors you hear are, okay, Tua to Washington seems to be one that's got some legs. And so then I'm sitting here going, okay, well, Houston is left. Really, if you don't think Davis Mills is that guy, they don't have their guy. And we've established that the draft is not great. But what if Houston gets a haul of players and a couple picks from Miami? And then what if after the year Houston said, man, you know what? Nick sat back and said, okay, I'm going to build up and load up this roster. If only I could find a guy who could operate this New England type offense with efficiency.
I know where you're
And there's Jimmy Garoppolo just sitting out there as they hand the keys of the car to Trey Lance next year. I think the 49ers might be able to get a pretty decent return. Again, it's what we talked about. Trubisky is going to have a market. I think Jimmy Garoppolo is one that I forgot to mention the other day, who I think will also have a market.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. That's exactly what I was thinking. Jimmy Garoppolo going there to Houston, because there is a familiarity. General manager, knows the player, helped draft the player, has seen the player play well at times in the system that they want to run. Yeah, so that makes a ton of sense. The Tua Tagovailoa thing to me is interesting. If Miami parts ways with him, who is going to be the team that now is like, oh, okay, we're good with Tua? The Washington football team, I mean, I like that thought, but if Washington isn't there, who's the other team? Who's the next team that we can say we can tie the Tua based on how people may have liked him before the drafts, now that we've seen him, how many of those same people still like him and view him as that guy, or has some of the luster, some of the shine come off of that, the new toy, now that we've seen him play and seen him play for like a year and a half?
I don't know, man. It's tricky to kind of find out where that home would be. We mentioned that we'll see some shuffling of quarterbacks and then their destinations. That I'm just writing these down, the ones we've come up with so far. Okay. So we've got Watson to Miami. We've got Tua to Washington. Mm-hmm. We've got Jimmy G to Houston. Mm-hmm. If we're saying we're so far ahead of ourselves, but if we're saying Trubisky is going to get something, like if I look for fits for Trubisky, I actually look at Pittsburgh as a place for him. You've got Haskins there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think with Trubisky's athleticism, I think he would give them something that maybe Haskins can't give them in that regard. But that was a fit that I thought, okay, that one makes some sense.
Yeah, no, it would make some sense because, you know, it's funny because we can beat up Trubisky and point out all the things that he hasn't been able to do. But he's been to two playoffs.
He's got some good tape. If you go back, he's got some out there.
He's been, even though people say it doesn't matter, he's been a Pro Bowl player. Mm-hmm. And I don't care what anyone says. Like, once you're a Pro Bowler, you're always a Pro Bowler. Just like winning an Emmy, you're always an Emmy Award winning. Whatever. It's one of those things that it stays with you for life. And so for him, I do believe it's going to be interesting. I think the one thing that Trubisky needs, he needs playing time. I'm not suggesting or wishing that something happens to Josh Allen. He needs one of those things to happen where he gets an opportunity to play a game or finish a game where people can see a new and improved version of the guy that was at Chicago. Yeah. He does that, then for sure, I think the market is robust. Right now, we have to do it off preseason play and what people talk about, his practices and those things. He needs a game or two to kind of seal the deal when it comes to kind of reviving the market around him.
So the challenge then, this is an example. I'll give you a quick example of why you're going to see the Jimmy G Trubisky markets unfold. So if we say Watson to Miami, mm-hmm. and we say Tua goes to Washington, mm-hmm. and let's say Jimmy G goes to Houston, then you've got Pittsburgh, Denver, Philadelphia, Detroit. Just those are just four teams right off the top of my head. So you've got Trubisky left out there is arguably the best option, and you've got those four teams all looking for a quarterback. I mean, it stands to reason that he's going to get a nice market. So it's the same with Jimmy G. I mean, if we just say Watson, if this thing happens in the next week or so and you end up with Watson and Tua off the board, then man, it's the price goes up for all these other dudes.
Yeah, the price does go up for all the other dudes. And so you have to kind of look at that and do it. And now that we're seeing that the draft may not bear fruit the way that we thought, it becomes musical chairs all over again. And last time we saw musical chairs where there were more bodies than chairs, now it flips. There are more chairs than bodies.
Yeah.
And so the chairs have to figure out how to get those butts in seats and get your franchise quarterback or get the quarterback that you believe can kind of lead you to the next level. It's tougher because there are not as many quarterbacks this time around. So that does increase the value and make it more challenging to make these moves because people understand exactly what it looks like next year and beyond.
All right. So last thing on this, and then we'll move on. So if I tell you, if you can be Houston in that trade and with Watson and you've got one player that you can pluck off Miami, we'll get, you know, a combination of players and picks. Who would be the one player that you would pluck?
For Miami?
Yeah. So Xavier, if you're Houston, you take Xavier Howard.
Yeah. I'll take Xavier Howard over Brian Jones. He's a better player. And I think he's scheme friendly. Mm-hmm. I think he can, even though he's played a ton of man-to-man in Miami, he can play zone. He can go get his hands on the ball. He's the one guy that I would go get.
He's 28 years old. Went to Baylor, so he'd be going back to Texas. So that's a good one. I think I would I think I would demand Phillips. I think I would just demand him. I want a young pass rusher. He's not going to cost you anything in terms of the money. Like, the money's super cheap.
It's our control it's locked in
4 years. He's 22 years old. Like, and they say we're not parting with him. Be like, well, that's fine. You're not getting a franchise quarterback in his prime. That's not happening. I've got Philadelphia. I've got all these other teams I can talk with. So that would be the one I think I would demand that they put.
And I'll take the tight end from him too.
Kasicki's good too. We'll go ahead and take him off your hands. Deshaun's going to get there, and it's going to be like the Will Smith. Where's everybody?
I would take Kasicki. So now we talked about Phillips, Howard, Kasicki. Okay.
Throw in a pick, and then we're good. Throw in your first round pick next year. We got a deal. We're done.
Yeah, and then you have to figure out a way if you're Miami. Okay, now how do we upgrade the weapons around?
Yeah,
around the quarterback. Now we got a quarterback.
Yeah. Now what? Yeah, it's gonna be fascinating to see what happens with that thing. We'll see what goes down. All right, I want to get to this interesting Thursday night game. We're gonna do that right after this. All right, Buck, we're going to be calling this game, doing it for Amazon. You can find it again if you haven't hung out with us on a Thursday. I encourage you guys to do it. It's a lot of fun. Just go to twitch.tv/movethesticks. twitch.tv/movethesticks. Bucky, myself, Joy Taylor is outstanding. We have a great time. We have some fun. We read some old scouting reports. We you know, go through some old war stories. And then we just call the game.
We explain what a unicorn is.
Yeah, we talk unicorns and Waldos. You know, if you don't know what that is, you got to tune in. You can catch us, and we'll explain it all. We talk about team building. It's fun. It's a hang, really. And the coolest part about this, I say this every week, is that there's a chat that's open. So, hey, Buck, you know, what did you think of this guy coming out? Hey, DJ, you know, who has the better offensive line? Blah 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 blah. Anything you put in that chat, we answer it real time, right during the game. So. It's a lot of fun. It's really a cool hang. So again, it's twitch.tv/movethesticks. But your takeaway on this one, Buck, I just saw the report that said it looks like Jedrick Wills is going to play. Odell potentially could play. That's TBD as we record this right now. But man, a lot of other guys, they are missing there for the Browns.
Yeah, a lot of guys are missing. And this is a huge test for both teams, but particularly the Browns. The Browns had a lot of optimism heading into the season. A lot of us talked about this being the most talented team in the league, and we still look at the roster, even though they have all these guys on the sideline. They are super duper talented, and so when you're this talented, you don't want to miss out on your window, because this is their opportunity to really do it. Pittsburgh is down. The Ravens are beat up and banged up, and the Bengals aren't ready. This is the time where the Browns are supposed to make their move and seize the division for a little bit. And so they haven't been able to do it. So I feel like this is a must-win game for them. And it's one of those games where Kevin Stefanski is going to have to be at his best. He's going to have to be in his bag, dialing up the tricks, making sure he makes the right calls when it comes to the gambles and guesses and all those things to give his team an opportunity to win. It's just a tough deal, though. It's just a hard deal because the Broncos' defense is legit and you don't have – your normal running game. That is the trick that's the tough part of it.
Yeah. I by the way, one of the things we do on Thursday nights is I have a very daddish musical reference every week. And then Bucky and Joy give me a hard time for it. So I'm looked at my board and I've already got mine ready to go. It's always a 90s reference, a 90s music reference. You ready for this one, Buck?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Keenum was the case that they gave me.
That's what we're doing. We're doing Snoop Dogg. Murder was the case. That's what we're doing. Holy smokes. That is not what I anticipated coming out of the mouth of the guy with the App State hat. But you know what? That's what happens. It's a victory Thursday. And so we're celebratory. And we're going all out. That is hilarious.
Oh, Joy's going to hate it. She's going to absolutely hate it. All right. No, look, Blake Hance is going to play right tackle for the Browns. Jedrick Wills back in at left tackle. James Hudson out of the lineup. That's good news for the Browns. James Hudson struggled in a mighty way last week. Max Crosby did to him was illegal in most states. Blake Hance has actually played pretty good as a young player. He's a college free agent, was with Buffalo in 2019. He was on the Jets practice squad last year. I actually think he's played pretty well out of Northwestern. So he slides over to the right side. You have Wills back into the left. That'll help their tackle situation after they were without Conklin and Wills for the last couple weeks. I think Demetric Felton is a guy who we both liked coming out of UCLA, is primed to have a good game in this one. They can run it. They can throw it. They're going to be in multiple tight end sets, so you're missing some receivers. The Browns are only going to have one on the field a bunch. I bet you see a lot of 13 personnel with those three tight ends with Hooper and Joku and Harrison Bryant. I think they're third in the league this year in playing in multiple tight end sets. Stefanski, the previous 2 years as a play caller, was number one. So they're going to trot a bunch of tight ends out there. I think they'll be able to get Demetric Felton involved. So that's what I'm looking at for them. On the other side of the ball, the Broncos are going to blitz. They blitz a bunch on third down, over 50%. They're the only team in the NFL that blitzes more than 50% on third down. They'll rush five to try and free up Vaughn one-on-one. I'm sure they'll try and get Vaughn on Hance, who I just mentioned, I think is playing pretty well, but that'll be a good matchup to watch. I think it'll be a little chess match there between Vic Fangio and Kevin Stefanski. We flip it over to the other side in this game. Bobby Massey can't block Myles Garrett or Jadeveon Clowney. That ain't happening. That's why I'm kind of sticking with Cleveland in this game, because I think at the end of the day, they can't. I think Cleveland has a better chance of blocking Denver than Denver has a chance of blocking Cleveland, if that makes any sense.
It does make sense. It's gonna be some tough sledding yeah, all around. And so this is going to be one that it's going to be interesting, because it's going to fall back on the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
What I'm curious to see is how this offense in Cleveland looks with Case Keenum pulling it than Baker Mayfield. And I'm not saying that Keenum is a better player than Mayfield, but I'm saying he's a more experienced player within the system that allows you to process quicker, get to your second and third reads quicker. They didn't get the ball in time, and as a result, it makes the defense stretch horizontally and vertically, because now you have someone who can get to the checkdowns quicker within the concept. Man, that changes the narrative a little bit, as opposed to when you're dealing with Baker Mayfield and he's trying to hang on the primary, then the secondary before taking the dump off. I want to see how Case Keenum operates this offense, because if he operates it very efficiently, then what happens, particularly if he operates it efficiently and they win, the more opportunities he gets, the more they get a chance to see what the offense looks like with him. It then begins to impact the money that they will be willing to go up to secure Baker Mayfield.
So you brought up my point here. Remember, we're getting close to the Christmas season. You remember It's a Wonderful Life?
Oh, yeah.
You get to see what George Bailey gets to see what life was like without him.
Yeah.
This is It's a Wonderful Life, the Cleveland Browns edition.
Yeah.
They're going to see. And It's a Wonderful Life, things were not good without George Bailey. Maybe it's different things without Baker Mayfield, but it is a glimpse. I think you use this word of the day. It's a little bit of a blessing in disguise for Cleveland. And I know I wish they had all the other pieces and all the other support around Case Keenum to see what it looked like. But nonetheless, we get a little sneak peek here, see what life looks like without Baker.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And we're not saying that this will make them replace Baker Mayfield with Case Keenum, but this will give them an opportunity to evaluate the system and the personnel. It would be a better evaluation if Odell Beckham Jr., if Jarvis Landry, if both running backs were available. You could see this offense operate a little bit without the trigger man.
Yeah.
But either way, you can get a sense of,
see what
is it
looks
a
like.
Big difference? Or is it not a big difference? Mm-hmm. But those quiet conversations that happen and exist in those closed door meetings, this would be one where Case Keenum's name would certainly be mentioned, and how this team performs certainly would be evaluated.
Yeah, it's fascinating, man. Anything else on your mind, Buck? Are you nervous at all? 3-1 Braves right now? I mean, by the way, as a kid who grew up in the South, for you to be rooting for the Dodgers over the Braves is, I mean, I don't even know how you go back to the Carolinas. It's very, and show it's, your face.
It's very easy. So this is why it's so easy. Growing up in North Carolina in Raleigh, there were only two baseball teams that would show up nightly on the tube. One.
The Cubs? No.
The Baltimore Orioles would show up on WLFL 22.
You didn't get WGN?
We did, but it like the Cubs, they always play in daytime.
It was WGN and TBS. Yeah, like that's as a little TBS. Kid. I was like, if I love the Padres, but then I'm like, I can always watch the Braves and the Cubs every day.
Right. So I could watch the Orioles. So they would come up. I would watch them. And at the time, it was Eddie Murray and all those guys.
Yeah,
They used to wear the old hat. So I used to love the Orioles hat, but they were they're all right. And then the Braves. Everybody and my mom used to love the Braves, though. Mm-hmm. Like, and they were.
I've never met somebody from the Carolinas.
They were the lovable.
Love the Braves.
I used to like Dale Murphy coming up. They were the lovable losers, like Chris Chambliss and all that. They had the light blue uniforms and all that. They would come on all the time. But what happened is when TBS took over, they became. Remember, they used to sell themselves as America's team because they were broadcast all over, and everyone would look at them. And then it got to the point where they were winning the division all the time, right?
Yeah, like and 10 years in a row or something like that.
A million years in a row. Yeah. And they were just boring. They didn't have any flash. They didn't have any
they
any
literally had Deion Sanders on their team. What do you mean they didn't have any flash?
Okay, so this is also where it impacted it. So in 94, shortly after the draft, I'm like, I'm gonna go watch the Braves play. Mm-hmm. Go down for the weekend, get the tickets. I get into the thing, I look out at center field where Deion Sanders is supposed to be. He's not playing because it's the day that he got traded to the Cincinnati Reds.
Oh, wow. So yeah. That's why you're down on him.
I'm bitter. I'm bitter.
You couldn't find any love in your heart for Ron Gant or David Justice? None of those guys?
No, they didn't really. Terry Pendleton. They just didn't do it for me. They weren't. Yeah. And Marquise Grissom, they didn't.
Yeah.
I wish I could say that the Durham Bulls were their farm team. They were right there down the road from
Raphael Furcal.
Yeah, I couldn't. Couldn't get into it.
That's disappointing, man. So how did so then explain to me, you live in LA, so then you just adopted
the LA thing because it just started going to Dodger games. Yeah. And so it started off like, you know, DJ, when you're scout, not really making a whole lot. You just sitting out there
in the bleachers.
Hey, $6. Look, the Dodgers had $6 tickets.
Yeah.
So you could go and sit in the bleachers for $6. Mm-hmm. Then you can sit there, you get Dodger dogs or whatever, and then they bought
your allegiance with those bargain basement prices.
Bargain basements, and then you kind of start seeing them, and then it kind of becomes a thing. And because I don't like any other LA sports, I'm not a Lakers fan or anything like that, the Dodgers are the deal. And then when you have a son who loves baseball and you pass it on, you go to the games.
Yeah.
You go to the games, and then it kind of became the family deal, and everyone digs the Dodgers. So That's what it is.
I'll give you a pass. I still don't know how your dad allows you to even come back into
I don't even know Carolinas. If my dad likes the Braves. I don't even know if my dad likes the Braves. He likes baseball, but I don't know if he likes the Braves. He just kind of likes watching it or whatever.
I mean, I went to App State, Buck, and when the
everybody –
Everybody in 98, loves the Braves. In 98,
oh, that's it. Everybody loves
the Padres played the Braves in either the NLCS. I can't remember. Was it – they played them in the playoffs. Anyways, it was like every single kid was living and dying with the Braves in that thing.
I played with a teammate, Antoine Williams, A-Train, who he went to the high school where Chipper Jones eventually attended.
Oh, I forgot about Chipper.
And he told me this. I don't know. He told me that the reason Chipper Jones wore the number is because Chipper looked up to him. Now, that might be one of those things like, it might be an urban legend. It might be an urban legend. But A-Train, that's what A-Train told me, that he wore. Chipper Jones wore the number because he looked up there. I was like, I don't know, Train. He's pretty good. I don't know if he needs to wear your number, but maybe that's it. So it was always his thing. But, I used to grow up watching him, and I love baseball, and I would do it. I just never really got into him. However, I will say this. When I look at them, the way that they play fits more like how I like baseball played. Because they do all the stuff. They move people around. They steal bases. They're very aggressive on the base paths.
Mm-hmm.
I like that kind of baseball. The Dodgers are kind of this motto, get people on base and try and hit the shot.
Yeah.
It's boom or bust. And it's so weird because I said this the other night. For Dave Roberts to play the way that he played, it's weird to manage a team that doesn't play anywhere like your style. It isn't not even anywhere close to the way that he played.
Well, that's an organizational decision.
It's an organizational thing. Yeah. It's still kind of weird to see because you're like, man, you think about the great moments that he had with the Red Sox, and this team doesn't emulate any of that.
No. Though the crazy thing to me, and maybe this is a discussion we'll use on another pod, but in kind of paying attention to the Braves, golly, they lose their whole outfield. You know, including Acuña, who's a top five player in baseball.
Oh, my gosh.
They go out and trade for three new outfielders.
They all fit
in, and they all are playing lights out. Like, that's hard to do, to fill three different spots like that with guys who kind of fit with the group and then play at a high level like that. They just, that's their GM, came from the Dodgers, I guess, was under Friedman.
Yeah, he was under Friedman for like 3 years.
Off to him, man. That's not easy to do.
No, and this is always an off-season thing, but evidently they were a team that was one of the last ones to the party when it came to embracing the shift.
Yeah.
And the way that they would shift the defense. But now they become like one of the top third in terms of shift percentages and the way they've been able to do it. I do think it's one of those things, DJ, where we talk about, it's one thing to have a philosophy. It's another thing to be adaptable within your beliefs and team build. And that, what they were able to do this year in the middle of the season, to me, that shows a tremendous amount of adaptability in terms of, hey, we're going to do what we need to do to win while staying within the framework of what we believe in. So hats off to them, even though I hope
I learned my lesson. Last year, I got crushed on Old Takes Exposed because as soon as the Braves went up 3-1, as with all Padre fans,
I don't understand that part of it.
We didn't choose this life.
I don't understand celebrating someone else's failures when you have a team.
If not, we would never watch the postseason. Our team doesn't get to the postseason.
So but you have to hang on. It's going to be so much sweeter.
You have to hate watch the Dodgers.
It's going
to
be so much sweeter, though, if you're ever able to get back to that moment. It'll be so much sweeter.
It's going to be sweet.
But you have so much hate in your heart.
We need an outlet for that frustration. And watching the Dodgers with their $300 million payroll not seal the deal is how we release all that tension. That's how we do it. I'm not proud of it. You think I like this life? I didn't choose this life. This life chose me, man.
All right. Well, hopefully on the next podcast, we have a chance to talk about the Dodgers' epic comeback as we talk about some more
football. We might. It wouldn't shock me. Crazy. All right. This is fun, man. Again, check us out Thursday night tonight if you're listening to this on a Thursday. Twitch.tv/movethesticks. Come hang with us. Probably no Dodger talk. Unless they lose. Oh, man. If they lose during the game, I might have to sneak in a couple jabs. If they lose.
Attention. I'm trying to pay attention to it.
Yeah. You can say that, by the way, you can say you're not paying attention to that baseball game while we're calling that Thursday night football game. I can see your computer. Just know that. I can see it. I see it. All right. That's going to do it for us, everybody. Appreciate you hanging with us. Special shout out to Nabil, our producer, who's the best in the business. Nobody works harder. Nabil does a great job. And we forgive him for his over-the-top Packer fandom. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.